It's another Jump Ball podcast. Today our guest is Josh Eberle from NBA.com's Hoop Mag. Josh and I get into the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Toronto Raptors, the Eastern Conference, Western Conference, trade talk. One thing to note, we recorded this on Thursday, and that was before the news was announced that J.R. Smith was going to miss 12 to 14 weeks instead of the 4 to 6. So that might have changed our outlook a little bit, but either way, it was a great conversation with Josh, so let's just tip it off. Josh, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, man, my pleasure. We're really lucky, really excited to get Josh. This is going to be some fun time to talk hoops. And you know how it is. We like to just jump right in. Josh, the Cavs, best team in the East right now, but they're going to be losing JR 4 to 6 weeks with that broken thumb. What are your thoughts? Is that something they got to really worry about? How are they going to get past that?
I don't think it's something they really have to worry about. I think they've shown that they're truly like the cream of the crop in the East. They've smacked the Raptors a couple of times. I don't think they're really scared by anyone. I mean, even worst case scenario, they fall out of first place. I really don't think home court advantage is the difference between a Raptors and Cavaliers series. That said, for a team as powerful as Cleveland has been, it does feel like they have some weaknesses, whether it's shooting, whether it's off the bench scoring, whether it's a little bit of rim protection. I mean, this Cleveland team is so good. And at the same time, you see these flaws and you wonder how they're possibly gonna line up against Golden State maybe down the line in the finals.
Yeah, I mean, similar to like last year though too, you know, a lot of us weren't sure how they'd match up with them, you know, going into the finals last year, and they obviously a groin kick and a sprained knee, and it's a Cavs championship.
Yeah, well, I mean, it took, you know, Bogut not being well. It took Curry not being 100%. It took a Draymond Green suspension. It took maybe the best finals performance ever from LeBron James. It took just a scoring frenzy from Kyrie Irving. I mean, there was a lot of if and ads there, and it just gets harder and harder every time something goes wrong for the Cavs to see that magic happening twice. And I mean, even on Christmas, you know, it doesn't really mean a lot, but J.R. Smith was big for the Cavaliers in the playoffs last year, and he will be missed for a stretch here for sure.
Yeah, and it kind of sucks with the upcoming Christmas game. You're hoping to have everybody healthy. Doesn't look like they might have love for that game either. So it sort of sucks in that sense that we don't have the full matchup again. You know, you touched on it for a second. What does Toronto have to do to get better and be able to really compete with Cleveland? Because even now, it's almost like I equate it to big brother versus a little brother kind of thing.
Yeah, it definitely has that feel. And I don't want to be too hard on the Raptors or on Toronto. Being from Canada, you got to understand that, like, this is the best this team has ever been. This is the most popular this team has ever been. It's hard to win a championship in the NBA, especially if you don't have Michael Jordan or LeBron James. And I really don't want to take too much away from what they've done, because they've done some great things and there's lots to be proud of. But that being said, they really are one piece away, and it's not just any piece. They can't just trade for anyone. The deadline, I think that's going to do it. I mean, last year there was a lot of talk about maybe with Ryan Anderson and other pieces, and I'm not sure that even puts them over the top. Like, they are a solid third star away from being a real threat to Cleveland. And is great. Kyle Lowry has been phenomenal. He should start in the All-Star game. DeRozan has been phenomenal. He should go to the All-Star game. But you need those two to score you 60 points efficiently. And efficiently is the key word there. Every night, and anchor a defense and run the offense, or you just have no chance. And right now they just don't match up well, and they don't have the firepower behind those guys.
So let's kind of brainstorm it here a little bit and play GM. I know it's not always the easiest position. It's very simple for us to kind of look at it and say, oh, you should do this. But what moves do you think they can make? Who is out there as a third star? Or who would you like to see that would be the third option for this team? I mean, I'm with you on Ryan Anderson. Probably doesn't cut it. You know, I know that's who they were talking about last year. You know, in the offseason, they were talking about Serge Ibaka. That was pretty interesting. You know, what's out there? What do you think? Give me a couple of names you think that would be a good fit there for that Toronto team to be that third option.
I think Serge Ibaka is the most realistic option. I think with his contract and maybe met the Magic don't want to pay him a fortune, he's the most feasible to attain. But I don't think he makes a huge difference. I like what Patrick Patterson gives the Raptors, but they do have a void at the 4-5 there, especially in small ball, to really move things around, to play defense. You know, Ibaka gives you some of that, but he's not the same guy he was, you know, a few years back with the Thunder. I think there's two guys that could make things really interesting. The first one being Paul Millsap in Atlanta. If they decide to part ways with Paul, and maybe they would have if they kept losing. They're on a bit of an upswing now, but they They were struggling a lot here in early December, end of November. So he's one guy I think that maybe he would make a difference. He's a very good defensive player. He can shoot from outside. He doesn't really get into Rosen's or Lowry's way. He's a plus at both ends. I think he could be a difference maker. And the other guy is DeMarcus Cousins. And he's kind of the big dice roll. So, because sure, he's going to cost you a fortune. He's going to cost you at least JV, Ross, maybe even Powell and a couple picks. Maybe. Maybe the Kings, you know, listen at that kind of an offer. So you bring in this guy and he's temperamental and he has all the off-court issues that he has. And you wonder, you know, now that he's in a winning atmosphere, does that change things? Does it not? He's a very, very good player. He's an elite player when he wants to be at both ends. I think he could be that guy that puts the Raptors over the edge, but he's just as likely to sink the ship. So, I mean, the Raptors have some decisions in front of them. I'd like to see them be aggressive and make a move because they've gone to the conference finals. And if they don't make a move, I don't see them going anywhere but down. So that's going to be up to Masai. That's going to be up to the Raptors organization. But they do find themselves in a bit of a bind here.
Yeah, that Cousins call is pretty interesting because I think that'd be a good spot for him in the sense of I think he needs to have a veteran around him. I think he needs to have a strong coach. And I think with Masai as well as in the front office, I think you have a strong front there that could kind of start trying to reach him. I feel like in Sacramento, he's had the run of the land. He's, you know, everything's been documented. We know all the stories. So, you know, I think that would be actually a really interesting spot, but it does come down to it. Do you blow everything up hoping that you can get Cousins and he's going to be good Cousins on his best behavior and really help out, you know, or, you know, if he doesn't, you pretty much set yourself up to get fired. That's the way I kind of look at it.
Yeah, and for myself, I mean, obviously I'm not in Masai's chair, but I'm making that move because, one, Masai has a history of putting good teams together that have failed to, you know, reach the pinnacle. This is Raptors' team is the best team he's ever put together. Kyle Lowry's playing the best basketball of his career, as is DeMar DeRozan. Windows don't last forever. Everyone likes to think that if the Raptors sit tight and keep building, that LeBron will retire eventually. But LeBron James is only a year or two older than Kyle Lowry. I mean, it's now. You're going to have to punch through the Cavaliers. You got to take that risk. So whether you want to do it this year, whether you want to do it next year, something to consider is that if you get Cousins at the deadline this year, you get him for a year and a half. You're going to get him for at least two playoff runs. Whereas if you get him next year, you could, you know, be disgruntled. You don't have a lot of time to acumen him to the city, and you know there's all sorts of factors, but he could walk on you in a year. So if you're going to make a move, now's the time to do it. You know, your stars are playing well. Take that risk, try to get to the next level. I don't think the fans will blame you when things go wrong, although maybe I'm speaking out of turn.
Well, I wanted to touch on one thing you brought up earlier, and I hadn't really thought about it, but this is the most excited Canada's been behind Toronto. Do you feel like the whole country's behind the Raptors trying to push them forward?
I would say no, because Canada on a whole does a really crappy garbage job of marketing basketball. I mean, only in the last few years have they really made a consistent effort to say, hey, we have an NBA team, and these guys are decent, you know, they don't suck. So I mean, the support is growing, but I think that we have not even touched, I mean, the Raptors have not even dipped into how big a market Canada is. And I mean, basketball is becoming more and more popular all over the country, coast to coast. And I really think that as this team gets better, and if they could make a trip to the finals, even if they don't win, they'd really start to see numbers for TV viewership and merchandise sales, et cetera, that they've never, ever seen before.
Got it. Well, come on, Canada, get on top of it, man. Jump on the Raptors bandwagon.
Yeah, I mean, it's here. How long will it be here for, though, right?
It's a lot more fun. Come on, guys. Enjoy it while they're winning. So one thing I want to talk about as well is, you know, the Eastern Conference is so jumbled up. You know, when you look at teams 3 through 12, it's like a difference of two or three games, I think, that really makes the whole thing. I mean, you have it starting with Boston, Charlotte, New York, Indiana, Chicago. Atlanta's, I think, the one that's just out of the playoff spot at 9. Then you have Milwaukee, Washington coming on of late. Detroit's still in the mix. And you have Orlando, which surprised me. I thought Orlando was just going to be terrible this year. But they've come on well lately and are starting to make a bit of a run. You know, of this mix of 3 through 12, you know, who do you think's not going to make it? What teams aren't going to be going to the playoffs when you shake it out?
Yeah, I think the Bulls are going to fall out. I think the Bulls have been a bit of a mirage to this point. I was happy to eat crow early on when they were shooting well, but we all knew it was going to fall back down to earth. They don't have a lot of athleticism. They don't have a lot of shooting. They're small, 3-1. It just doesn't fit. It was we're going to rebuild. Oh, wait, you know, Dwayne Wade's going to come home. Maybe we'll compete. And it's a mess. It's a Thanksgiving dinner plate that's stacked a little too tall, and yeah, they just have no chance of eating it all. They're not going to get to eat their cake, or they're not going to get to have their cake and eat it too this year. So I think the Bulls are going to drop out. I also don't like the Pacers very much right now. I think the Pacers are playing pretty bad basketball. The Knicks in the 5 seed is kind of hilarious to me right now. I don't feel like they're a 5 seed, but here they are 2 games over 500. The East is still bad. You know, you hear these stories, you know, and it's a nice narrative pump, and I think Cleveland loves to pump it because they don't want to impede James's legacy, but you hear that the East is getting better, and it's not. I mean, it's more competitive, but nobody other than the Raptors and Cavaliers holds a candle to the top 5 or 6 out West. You know, the Celtics, who are supposed to be pushing for that second seed, have been pretty wildly disappointing even before the Isaiah Thomas injury. I think, honestly, the Wizards and the Bucks are the two teams that interest me most of late. I think they'll both get in. Milwaukee's been playing shorthanded without Chris Middleton. Giannis is a freak. Jabari Parker's really starting to figure things out. I think the Bucks are interesting for maybe a first-round matchup. And the Wizards have never seen better play out of their three guys in Otto Porter, Bradley Beal, and John Wall. And while that team, on the whole, has a lot of holes, I think a star backcourt finally meshing some will be enough to get them in the mix.
Let's go back real quick and talk about Milwaukee, because I've been really enjoying them lately. You know, the past two games against the Cavs, although they got blown out last night, you know, they were in it for most of the game, and it really until the end, it didn't feel like the Cavs could just put them away. And same thing in the game before when it was in Milwaukee. Went down to the wire. James hits a three off of a after timeout play, which was a deep three, which you're willing to give James that shot. You know, Giannis has been phenomenal. Can you talk a little about his play and what you're seeing from Giannis and Jabari Parker being his wingman and so on? And hopefully, you know, they get Chris Middleton back, and, you know, what do we have?
Yeah, you have a really good team. You have a really good team in the making. And, like, I've been struck. Like, I'm ailing. I'm keeled over as we speak with Giannis fever. Like, it's something else, man. Like, you know, we've been talking about him for a couple years and the size and his skill set. And, you know, after the All-Star game where a kid let him run some point guard, we saw, you know, what he looked like being that on-ball guy. But it's more than that now. I mean, he's probably in the top 5 or 10 for the Defensive Player of the Year. He's probably just outside the top 5 or 10 for the MVP race. He's still, what, like 22 or just turned 22? Or yes. 23.
He's still a baby. I mean, he looks like he doesn't have any facial hair.
Like, he's an absolute puppy still. Like, as developed as he is, he still does some, like, bonehead stupid things that he gets away with because of his size and athleticism. And when he figures out how to shoot, like, I mean, there's just, like, this guy is already a top 15 player in the NBA. Like, he's been a top 15 player in the NBA this year, and he's raw as hell. He is. Like, I don't even mean that as an insult. He's so raw still as a basketball player, and he's already a top 15 player. Like, with his frame and with some more coaching and some more experience under his belt, he's going to be phenomenal. I would take LeBron James if I was building a contender for the next maybe 2 or 3 years. And after that, I would take Giannis over Towns. I would take Giannis over Davis. I would take Giannis over anybody just because I feel like there is nobody, and I hate the word, but like that has a ceiling anywhere near him. You know, at this point, I feel like his floor is LeBron light, and to be LeBron light makes you all time. So, yeah. I mean, the Bucks.
LeBron light is something. I mean, that's quite a comment.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, even if he's never, like, I'm not saying he's going to be as good as LeBron, but like to be LeBron light, which is where I think he's headed, you're a hell of a player. You play both ways. You impact the game all over the court. Jabari Parker, you know, obviously he's not at the same level, but Jabari Parker has shown you a lot of good things. And a couple weeks ago, I said, you know, kind of reminds me of Harrison Barnes. And I didn't mean it as an insult, just that, you know, he can handle the ball a little bit. He does have some promise as a defender. He can stretch the floor. But I think he's more athletic than that, and I think he's faster than Barnes. And then, like, Middleton, who's not even there, was looking like their best player for a while last year, a good two-way wingman. I mean, I think the Bucks really have a good recipe going for them. Jason Kidd, I don't know if he's the guy to take them somewhere long-term, but they have a team there.
Yeah, I mean, the Middleton injury really is what kills them. That they have Middleton this year, you're looking at them really competing in the top four in the East. I wouldn't know a team that's better than I think they'd compete with Boston for sure. Toronto would have a hard time defending them. It'd be a really interesting to have seen this with Chris Middleton. I didn't realize he was out 6 months. I knew he was going to be out for a long time, but 6 months, I was like, wow. That brings him back at around, like, March maybe if they're lucky?
Yeah. They're saying March or April he could be back. And, I mean, if they're in a playoff position, that makes them really interesting first-round series. But, like, I think they've done some good things, too. Or, like, I think Malcolm Brogdon was a great pick in the second round. I think Thon Maker has a lot of potential. And, I mean, they're young. They're so young. This isn't a team that we talk about Toronto, where their best player, Kyle Lowry's in his 30s. DeRozan's 27 or 28. You know, the window. You're talking about the window. Like, the Bucks are a young, young team. Like, there's nothing stopping them from being legitimate the next five plus.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think they're going to be the team nobody wants to play in the first round. That's the way I look at it. Whatever seeding they end up in, the other teams up top are going to be like, really don't want to have to battle them. You brought up Washington, and they started out really poorly, but they have really brought it on as late. They came back against the Clippers. They lost a tough one against Indiana, but they've been playing really hard. I believe they beat Chicago last night. You're right. This is the best, you know, we've seen of Beal, Wall, and Porter together. You know, it's a surprise for me because I really was betting on the Wizards to just be god-awful as well. And they've really kind of come up, and I've been pretty impressed with the play between Wall and Beal. You know, what are you seeing there? What are they doing differently?
Yeah, you know what? I don't know. Maybe... You know, their grievances kind of came out a little bit in the offseason. I can't remember who first reported it, but, you know, there was the comments that, like, Wall ate first and Beal ate second.
Right.
And there was some disputes in the past that have been reported, and they don't exactly love each other, and yada, yada, yada. You could kind of feel with this team that they were never totally in sync, whether it was contract disputes or injuries. Or the word that comes to mind is unified. You know, I'm not watching a team where I feel like John Wall has to hold the ball for 20 seconds of the shot clock and, you know, either make a magic skip pass happen or hit a stupid jumper to score. You know, Bradley Beal's out there on the court. He's playing well. You know, they're passing it back and forth. I don't see any division in this team. And not to say that I saw that in the past, but they definitely didn't have a unified feel. Otto Porter has stepped up. Marcin Gortat is very solid. He's a very solid player. But John Wall and Bradley Beal are carrying huge loads. Wall has got better every month so far this season. I think Beal is second or third in scoring in December. You know, if you want to put his numbers next to a Paul George or a Melo, he's scoring way more efficiently. Like, this, the team isn't great, and they aren't deep. Their bench is, to be honest with you, pretty darn horrid. But this team has come together in some capacity, and it's kind of nice for their fans to finally see this all-star backcourt play like an all-star backcourt.
That's what I'm seeing with them, and I'm very impressed with what I'm seeing. Hopefully they can maintain it and sustain this kind of run. Let's shift gears a little bit, and let's go to the Western Conference, which is a lot more interesting, I think, in regards to storylines and things like that. Houston's come on really strong of late. Even though they just lost to the Spurs, they beat Phoenix last night, so they're 11 out of their last 12, excuse me. Do they have a chance to finish third? I mean, nobody was talking about them. At the beginning of the season, it was Golden State, Clippers, San Antonio. You know, can Houston sneak into that tier there and be in the top three seed?
Yeah, I think that they can. And I don't think they're the third best team. But with the Blake Griffin injury, the Jazz couldn't buy a healthy week if, you know, they begged for it, if they had a fairy godmother, if they rubbed the genie's lamp there. The Jazz just cannot stay healthy. Memphis is playing really well, but I don't think they have the same talent across the board. They don't have the same, you know, star power that Harden brings you. I think the Rockets are on a good course, and with the Griffin injury, I think it's kind of cleared the way for them.
Right, and, you know, I look at them, I think they have potentially the MVP. I think they have the Coach of the Year. And quietly, I think they have the sixth man of the year with Eric Gordon coming off the bench. You know, he's shooting something like 50% from three or something close to it, you know, and shooting seven a night. Like, that's not an easy task. He's kind of revitalized his career. I think Ryan Anderson is playing really well. But I really think the key to that whole team is Patrick Beverley. You know, he's the guy that kind of lets them play. He plays them harder on defense. He really kind of hounds the other guys a bit. You know, and the other thing I'm going to watch for a little bit more carefully is that they lost Clint Capela. So he's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks with I believe he has a broken something or other in his foot. I'm not sure. It's not crazy big, but it's still something like 4 to 6 weeks that's going to make it pretty difficult for them. You know, what are your thoughts with how they match up with those big three teams?
Here's the thing with Houston. They also lost Capela for some time, who I think Capela was very good for them, whether it was finishing around the rim or finishing lobs on offense and anchoring what's a pretty mediocre defense. But this Rockets team just gets hot. And when you get as hot as this Rockets team does, and we saw it with the Suns in the past to some extent, you just could never count them out. And it was kind of like the Warriors the last couple of years too, where just like this team can come back in a hurry. They can put up points in a hurry. You know, a 12-point deficit with 6 minutes left is not the same versus these guys as it is someone else. And whether it's Harden or whether, you know, Reese is a good shooter, Anderson's a good shooter, you get Gordon and Beverly out there, you play small ball, they move around and they jack it up. I don't know that they're the third best team. Like, I don't know that they have the same discipline. I don't know if they're going to be as well coached, and defense does play an awfully big role come the playoffs in a way that it doesn't quite to the same level in the regular season. But there's no reason to believe these guys can't punch somebody in the nose. And I think that's what they've been doing. I think that's what they're going to keep doing, especially when other powers in the West continue to suffer big-time injuries.
Real quickly, I just want to correct myself. Eric Gordon's not shooting 50% from three. He's shooting 43% from three. So I don't know where I got 50% from, so I apologize for being wrong on that. But you did just give me the perfect segue to go into the Clippers and their big injury problem and Blake Griffin. You know, how do you see this playing out over the next few weeks?
Well, I'm just going to say on your Gordon comment, either way, Gordon has been filthy. I mean, I think that's – I'm not going to disagree with you there. But I think with the Clippers, this is CP3 MVP time. And he was my pick for MVP before the season, and now he has a chance to live that. And without Griffin, he's going to get more usage. He's really going to have to run this offense. You know, as much as he does normally, Griffin is a good playmaker. You can dish it off to Griffin and go over to the corner. You can stay at the top. This is a team, and I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, forgive me. But over the last few years, I think DeAndre Jordan is 70% of his buckets are assisted. J.J. Redick, I think 65% of his buckets are assisted. Like, these guys literally live on the playmaking of Paul and Griffin to make their money. And now you're telling me that Chris Paul is going to have to keep them afloat again in a Western Conference that's tougher than a Western Conference that we underestimated again. Like, I mean, this is really, it's time to campaign CP3, the people that believed in you. The year you got robbed, now is the time.
Yeah, and you know, he did it last year. I mean, he was able to maintain and keep this team afloat for, gosh, felt like at least two-thirds of the season from when Blake went out. If he can do it again and just kind of keep them to be able to maintain I'm a little concerned because I just think they've fallen off, and now we're looking at it again. And they, you know, that hot start was phenomenal, but now they've dropped off quite a bit. They got it. I'm just worried with Houston coming up now. I feel like they're going to drop a few games. You know, some of these losses they've had have not been good losses. They're not losing to the top echelon of teams, you know. So I'm pretty concerned. The other thing that worries me about them is they really don't have any other way to improve. There's nothing left in the cupboard. You know, they don't have – there's nobody they're bringing up from the D-League that's going to come in and fill that void or anything like that. I mean, you're never going to replace Blake. But the big question is, you know, with Blake's injuries and his constant injury problems, is this a time to trade Blake? Like, I'm completely against blowing this team up. But, you know, I can understand people making the pitch of Blake's a free agent. What are you going to do, you know, come the end of the season?
So nine of the Clippers' next 13 games – against lottery team. So, you know, they got a couple matchups with the Thunder. They see the Rockets once, they see the Grizzlies, and they see the Spurs. So, sorry, nine of the next 14. You know, they don't have a terribly hard schedule. You know, I don't know how long Blake's going to be out. I think they said 6 weeks?
Yeah, 4 to 6.
But like you said, they're kind of stuck. You know, Doc, the GM, is not great. He's made some pretty questionable moves. You know, they're going to have to play Rivers, Minutes, at small forward. Mo Spates is a nice gimmick player, but he doesn't really add a lot to the team. Jamal Crawford has his pros and his cons. I mean, they're not deep. They don't have a lot of anywhere to go. I mean, they're going to have to make a move. You know, they knew that last year. Their move was Jeff Green, which was an awful, awful move. But, you know, that's Doc Rivers. Maybe this year it's a Wilson Chandler or somebody else that can actually help them, you'd like to think. But we'll have to wait and see. And as far as it goes with Blake Griffin, I literally wrote two or three articles last year petitioning for them not to break it up this year. You know, saying eventually teams break through. And they've won the third most games in the NBA over the last 5 years. The third most. Nobody else. It's Spurs, Thunder, and Clippers in that order have won the most games over the last 5 years, or prior to this season. As much as the Clippers have choked or haven't gone far or had mental weaknesses or injuries or whatever you want to give them for their excuses, it's hard to maintain that level of success. And you look at the early Dallas Mavericks and what they did in winning 50-50-50-50 and eventually breaking through the 1 year with Dirk. You have to think that if you stay at a high level for a long time, your time will come. Something will happen. You know, last year Steph Curry goes down. Paul and Griffin aren't hurt, maybe that's the year they punch through. I mean, but you have to give yourself a chance to be there, and I think if you break up Paul and Griffin, you're going to wonder what if for a long time. I know it's a risk going into the offseason with everybody in a new CBA and being able to test the market, but I really think you owe it to this team and these fans who have never even sniffed the conference finals. It's not just Chris Paul. It's, you know, 40 years of Clippers fandom to stay with it for this one more year.
You know, it's funny that you brought up last year, because I really felt like last year was the year for them to break through. You have to get lucky. I don't think people understand how much luck plays into it. You know, and for every team, anybody that wins a championship, there's a part of luck. You brought up that Dallas team. I was with the Spurs that year. We were the number one seed. And the second to last game of the year, Manu hurts his elbow. And that really hurt us when we go to play Memphis. And Memphis upsets us, and they played a great series. But, you know, I honestly believe if we got past Memphis, we win the championship that year. I think luck plays a big role into it, and I think last year was their chance. I'm a bit concerned that this year, you know, they missed the boat. And I think it's just another tough break for them. And I just don't see how this team really kind of breaks through. But if they don't get a second or third seed and they got to play Golden State in the second round, I think it's over.
Well, yeah, but like Mo, let's talk about luck for a second. All right. And I love this notion. I hate this notion. And I mean, think back to the 2014-15 Warriors and everybody who hated the Warriors was discrediting them with, like, you didn't have to play Mike Conley and you didn't have to play Kyrie and Love and everybody was hurt and it's, you know, you got gifted a championship. And it's true. It's absolutely true. They got so lucky. At the same time, you can't knock a team for seizing the moment when luck hits them. Because luck hits an awful lot of people, and you just never know. I mean, it's out of your hands. When people get hurt, it changes things in the playoffs. You know, when a ball bounces a certain way, it changes things in the playoffs. When a bad call or a good call or whatever, I mean, this is not 100% the better team always wins on paper, and it never will be. But I think you have to, if you're the Clippers, you have to hang in and hope that something happens. You know, maybe you get hit fire. Maybe you make a trade at the deadline. Maybe Durant or Curry goes down. I mean, the Warriors are the only team that truly, truly scare you in the West. I mean, as good as the top six or seven are, if you're the Clippers, you're not terrified to play the Spurs. You beat them. You know, you're not terrified to play the Rockets. You have more star power than they do, even though they beat you in a pretty ugly series. But you know what I mean? Like, you have to roll the dice because the chances of the Clippers, you know, sending Blake out and rebounding and getting back to this point in the next decade is not good. You just owe it to the fans to stay there because I don't see them getting a competitive package for Blake where you can just reload and keep running at this thing. And yeah. I think also by if you trade Blake and you take a return that doesn't help you win this year, then what does that say to Chris Paul and to J.J. Redick, who are also looking for contracts this year?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not making the pitch that they should trade Blake at all. I really don't think they can. I don't think they're going to get – there's not a trade out there that's going to make them a championship contender by moving Blake or Chris Paul. Like, you know, you hear those two things, and both of those things are crazy to me. I'm just concerned, you know, I'm curious what the Clippers will have to do come free agency time, but I guess that's something for a conversation for you and I down the road, because the other team I really do want to talk about in the West is Memphis. You brought them up a bit. I was shocked they were able to handle Conley being out for 3 weeks. You know, we all expected him to be out longer because, you know, when you break your back, it's not something that you can just say, oh, I'm fine, I'll start playing again. But Memphis was able to maintain, you know, they're able to hold on. Gasol has been phenomenal for them. You know, what are you seeing from the Grizzlies?
I love what I see from the Grizzlies. And you know, I had the Grizzlies in the 5 seed this year. They're in the 5 seed right now. Fizdale's come in. He's done a good job. You know, they've had their problems with injuries too. The Chandler Parsons contract was ridiculous. Not that he doesn't deserve it when he's healthy, but there's just no faith in him standing on those two legs in a basketball.
I got to stop you there. I just think Chandler Parsons is never going to be healthy. I feel like he's just going to be robbing teams left and right. He's going to get big contracts and never play.
Well, that's why it's ridiculous, right? I mean, I'm a Dallas fan. Chandler Parsons, when he was healthy, especially in January and February of last year, was a really good player. I think he was averaging something like 18-6-4, shooting like 50-40-70 or something. I mean, he's a good player. I mean, he really, really is a good player. I promise you he is. But, you know, again, standing on his own two legs, on the hardwood, in consecutive games, you know, forget 7 games or playoff series, it's just impossible for him. I mean, this guy cannot stay healthy. So you gave a ridiculous contract to a guy, and I still think it's justified, because if you're the Grizzlies, who else are you going to sign? And what else are you going to do? And that's kind of the lower market. You know, you have a couple homegrown players. and you're a good team, you're not a great team, you have to take these risks, and Parsons was their risk. So, I mean, if, and I don't even know what percentage chance you want to give this, we'll say 15. There's a 15% chance that Mike Conley, Marc Gasol, and Chandler Parsons all walk into the playoffs healthy. I mean, I think they're a tough out. They're a very tough team. They're well coached. They're veterans. They've been in the playoffs. They've gone to the conference finals. You know, I do think they're excellent. But, you know, it's can they stay healthy? And can that grit and grind style really get you over a team like the Warriors that are just so much more talented than you? No, probably not. But can they win a series? Yeah, I think they can.
Yeah, I mean, I like this team. I've had a love-hate with Memphis because they've knocked me out of a lot of playoffs when I was in the NBA. But I do enjoy this team. I love how hard they play. I love the dynamic between Tony Allen, Gasol, Randolph, and Conley. You can feel it. They're all tight. They've been together for at least, like 5 or 6 years at this point. They've all been playing together. I think it's a good, strong dynamic. I just think, like you said, they just don't have the firepower to go real deep in the playoffs.
Yeah, and they probably don't. And, I mean, you know, who else they got going right now? I mean, it's always fun watching who the Grizzlies fill holes with. I mean, like, Andrew Harrison, Wade Baldwin, you know, whoever, Troy Daniels, like, whoever they have filling holes is always awesome. Like, watching 40-year-old Vince Carter play basketball and, like, get hype and, like, get articles written about him at 40, playing, like, 20 minutes a night on a playoff team still in the NBA is super cool.
I'm killing super with it, too, though. Like, that's what's amazing about it. Like, I love watching it because, like, he'll come out and I'm like, Vince is going to drop 15 on you if you're not careful.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm super into it. It's super fun. But I'm also like an NBA junkie, and that doesn't if I'm a fan who is really trying to be optimistic about Memphis's title hopes, the current state of things doesn't have me buzzing with joy.
Yeah, and they're kind of on the downward trend. But Josh, I got a real random question for you here. You know, how you got any trips to LA planned anytime soon?
I don't. No.
Well, whenever you do come down to LA, I got to take you to my favorite gelato shop here in downtown LA. Uli's Gelateria. It's one of the best. You cannot go wrong with. There are a few gelato shops in LA, but none are quite like Uli's. So when you come into LA, I'm taking you down there. It's in the Spring Street Arcade here in downtown Los Angeles.
Okay, I'll make sure to put it in the day planner if I ever get down there.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm going to make you go. So that's my excuse so I can get gelato, just so you know. I'm allowed to get gelato if I take other people.
Fair enough.
All right. Well, the other fun stuff to talk about right now is trade talk, and we kind of got into it a little bit earlier with the Raptors, you know. But I did want to ask you, and we already brought his name up, DeMarcus Cousins. What's his value? Do you think? I hear conflicting reports. I know teams will readily jump after him, and some teams are like, I don't want this guy a mile near my locker room. You know, what do you think his value is around the NBA?
I think it's honestly hard to tell, and you get a feeling a lot of the time before the draft or before the deadline, the teams are stunting. You know, they're trying to make you give you the impression that someone isn't available when they are, or that, you know, they cost more when they don't, right, or, you know, the games that they play. But I think the Kings are just being the Kings, and they just have no idea. Like, I don't think Sacramento has a clue what they want to do this year, what they want to do next year. I don't think they think they're out of the run for Cousins in the future. I think they are. I think he's gonna run as fast as he can away from them as soon as he can if they leave it to free agency. But they're a ship wandering aimlessly in the ocean, and they have been for a decade now. And their drafting has been terrible, and their management has been terrible. And I've never seen a locker room, you know, have this many quotes to the media. You know, you got Rudy Gay talking about how he doesn't want to be there in the offseason. You've got Aaron Aflalo or Flalo talking the other day about how he wouldn't come in the game. There were reports he wouldn't even come into the game. You've got stuff with Cousins every other week. You know, you added Matt Barnes to this mix for some reason. You have Darren Collison coming off a battery charge in the offseason. I mean, the Kings are such a mess. So when you look at them and you know you're an opposing GM and you call, you know, if I'm anyone else in the league, I'm like, what do you want? You're like a game out of the playoffs right now. Do you want a competitive package for DeMarcus Cousins? Like, do you want to sell Rudy Gay and DeMarcus Cousins and start over? Like, I mean, I know you never got running, but do you want to start over? It's just a puzzle, and I don't know if anyone's going to be able to put it together. I really don't. I know that Cousins has a lot of value. Obviously, a big who can play at both ends, who can shoot, who's as physical as he is, has value. But Howard Beck is as good as it gets in this industry. He's the top of the top. He's elite. And he was saying that he's talked to a handful of GMs who have no interest in Cousins because of how he acts on and off the court and his personality. And, you know, I trust Beck's word. And, I mean, that factors in. It truly does. Not as much as it does in the NFL, but it, in the NBA, it will. And if you have something good in the NBA, like the Raptors do or the Celtics kind of do or whoever is thinking about it, you're not going to be as likely to make that jump if you really feel like this guy could be poisoned as much as he can be. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think it's easier in the NFL to hide a bad character in your locker room. You know, it's a 53-man locker room. You know, it's not as much of a, you know, I hate the phrase that everybody uses, a locker room cancer, but, you know, it's not as much of a problem as it is in the NBA when it's only 12 to 15 guys. I think the other thing that's interesting about it, and it really hasn't become relevant until Portland has decided to take a nosedive lately, but they are just a game out of the playoffs, which is absurd to say anyways. I don't think they will move Cousins if they're sniffing the playoffs. If we're close to the deadline and they're still a game or two out, I don't think they're moving Cousins. But if they're five or six out, I think they'll finally start to listen and start to move. I don't even know what they would get back. I'm terrified. Because I could see them totally taking a lowball offer thinking that's a great deal. I just, with that whole organization, I just have no idea what's going on. And I feel like I'm not alone in that sense.
Yeah, I mean, I have zero faith in the Kings. I feel like they're the worst run organization in pro sports. They're a mess. If you look at everything they've done over the last 10 years, the decisions they've made, the trades, the signings, the draft picks, there's no rhyme, there's no reason. They continue to make blunders. And even though they're a game out of the playoffs, the Trailblazers look horrid. The Nuggets are young, and like their coach is still making changes in the starting lineup. You know, the Lakers are pretty terrible. They've been banged up. I would still bet on the 9-19 Timberwolves over the 12-17 Kings, just because I feel like they're closer to unity. They're closer to having discipline at both ends, and the Kings are such a wild card. I mean, Cousins is a really, really good player, but until, you know, he's in a situation with maybe some better culture and winning, there's no real way for me to diagnose if he's all-time or just another all-star who needs to give his head a shake.
Yeah, definitely. And you brought up Minnesota, and the one thing I wanted to mention about Minnesota, you know, what do you think Thibodeau is going to make a move? I could just feel him itching. Like, I just feel him frustrated and not being patient like I think he should be with the young guys. I'm worried more than curious that he's going to make a move and ship one of these young guys out. You know, what are you thinking there?
I could see it. And I think it would be a monstrous mistake. I was one of the minority who didn't think Sam Mitchell deserved to get canned. I felt like you got growth from Wiggins. I felt like you got growth from LaVine. Towns had a rookie of the year season. The Timberwolves, I thought, you know, showed some growth in wake of a tragedy, and Mitchell did what he could. You know, Tibbs was supposed to come in and fix everything overnight. You know, that was never realistic, but the team has actually regressed. I don't think they've improved. They've won a couple games now, so maybe we're starting to get over that hill. But he hasn't done a great job so far, and this is a guy who was on a team that was competitive in Chicago every year, and this is a guy who was winning in Boston, and I don't think he wants to sit through another year or two of this. So I could see him pulling the trigger on a move, and I think the guy who loses out in that situation is either Rubio or LaVine or both. But I think it would be a mistake. And I think if you look at the Thunder, not to say that the Timberwolves have the same collection of talent that the Thunder did with Harden, Westbrook, and Durant and Ibaka early, they have really been the blunt of a lot of jokes and skepticism for the decisions they made to move on too quickly and to not spend money and to not, you know, be patient. And now their window is done. And now we get to watch Westbrook put up empty stats every single night. And it's fun for the fans, but they're never going to win a championship. And I think Minnesota would forever, ever be cursed if they move somebody too early. And, you know, you move LaVine somewhere else, and he absolutely turns into a star, and, you know, you never make it through. The weight here of moving one of these young guys before they've really had a chance to figure it out is too much of a detriment in my eyes to make a move.
Yeah, I thought it was really unrealistic, the expectations people had put on the Timberwolves to start the season. I mean, some people had them winning close to like 50 games, and I was like, that's a bit obscene. You know, no matter how good Thibodeau is as a coach, you got to remember that he inherited a team that had already made the playoffs, had guys that had experience. So it was easy for him to kind of develop a defensive philosophy for them. It's much harder for younger guys to grasp the philosophy. And I think he needs to to be patient. I do think it's at least a 2-year process. You know, for me, I was like, they should just be willing to accept whatever happens this year and just focus on improvement and then go from there. I do disagree with you a bit on Sam Mitchell. I just didn't like his in-game coaching. You know, I constantly would watch games and just wonder what he was thinking when he would making a defensive adjustment or run a certain offensive play, especially down the stretch. So, you know, I get why they made that move, but at the same time, I think everybody has to be patient, and I think a lot of the stress the Wolves are experiencing now is because of these crazy-ass expectations that were put on them early in the year.
Yeah, there were ridiculous expectations, and there will be a chance for growth, and I think with Andrew Wiggins, who has been up and down and all around, he has the same potential to be a great defender that Jimmy Butler does. But yeah, I mean, I think in general, Minnesota has been, you know, irrelevant longer than Sacramento. You know, the culture is viewed very differently, but this is a team that was really, really, really ready to be good. So I think at least for this season, you leave it. And no matter what the record is, you reevaluate in the offseason. But you give it a full year under a new coach with a new regime because they cleared everybody out. And you really give this a hard look before you make any brash decisions.
We're definitely on the same page there, though, of not making any moves just yet. So what team do you think needs to make a move? Like, who are you looking at going like, gosh, you guys desperately need to make something happen right now? When you look around the NBA, who falls in line?
I feel like the big players were Toronto, who have a couple of picks. Some young guys, they're on the cusp. They, you know, they feel like they're a move away. Boston, who's been hoarding assets for forever. Denver, who, you know, is three deep across the board, but, you know, who do they play, who don't they play? Those would be the guys I think that were really in the market, and the Kings, obviously. And then, you know, maybe the Hawks if they start to lose. You know, maybe Memphis decides to get – I don't know. But those are the main players. I think for Boston, I know I honestly felt like Boston, this is going to be the year they did something, but this draft class is getting so much hype, and – you know, you've got guys that are, you know, drawing a lot of interest, whether it's Ball or Monk or Fultz or whoever.
Right.
Where I don't think they're really stoked about giving up that Brooklyn pick right now. And, I mean, that's kind of tough, but I think maybe, you know, the reports are that Danny Ainge is overvaluing his pieces, his players that he already has. But now I'm wondering if maybe Danny Ainge is undervaluing his pieces where he does, or maybe rightly evaluating them, where he knows that, you know, even if you get a Paul Millsap or even if you get a DeMarcus Cousins, you're probably not beating Cleveland still. So why would we give up on a potentially future all-star in the draft when we can just sit with the guys we have? And so I think Boston's really stuck in between, you know, do I pull the trigger and really go for it, or do I ride what I have here and see what comes our way in the draft?
One team I'd put in there that really I feel like has to make a move is Portland. Floundering at the 8 spot, struggling quite a bit. I feel like they got to make a move. They got to bring in somebody that's going to play defense on that squad. You know, a defensive center, maybe a guy like Noel. I'm not sure if Noel's the answer, but they need to start. I feel like they got tons of contracts. I mean, they re-signed everybody they had and then gave Evan Turner $70 million. And I feel like now it's, you know, with all these contracts, they were looking at them like assets. Now they need to make a move to kind of – they got to get somebody to play defense. They're so bad defensively when you watch this team. You know, and it's
– Yeah,
it's frustrating.
Sorry.
No, it's just frustrating. But, yeah, what do you think there? Like, what – is there something Portland can do?
Yeah, they're really bad. They're really, really bad. The one thing I'll say about them, though, is that they were really, really bad last year before Christmas. And then Lillard went down. And they won a couple – and he came back and they kept winning. So I'm going to hold my breath till a couple weeks after New Year's because they were really terrible last year as well, prior to. But yeah, something's got to change. And I think that I'm again in the minority where I didn't think Alan Crabb was worth that contract. I just didn't see him. I felt like he did a great job for them off the bench and he was a nice player, but you know, now you gave all this money to Crabb, you gave all this money to Turner, you don't have a rim protector, you don't really love Plumlee, he still hasn't got paid yet. You know, everybody got championship bonuses for getting to the second round, and now you're in trouble. And I think, honestly, it's hard to sell people on Crabb when he hasn't done anything great and his role hasn't increased. Like, why do you want to trade for a guy that hasn't really shown you much more? So I think they're going to have to break up CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard if they're really serious about hauling somebody in. And I think Portland fans will be miserable about it and it'll feel gross, but that's kind of the position that they put themselves in.
What do you think a guy like CJ McCollum could get you?
It's funny, actually. There was a few of us talking about this the other night. Obviously, he's a terrific player. Terrific scorer. He's shooting, I don't know his exact percent. I won't say it's 50% from three, but I think he's near Eric Gordon levels. He's absolutely just stroking it. And, you know, he's young still. I mean, he's young. His extension kicks in next year. You know, it's expensive, but it's probably a fair deal. I think there'd be a lot of interest for a guy like CJ McCollum, but again, it's which direction do you want to go? Because there's only so many stars on the market. There's only so many guys that can help you win right now, and a lot of people are hesitant to move them. We haven't seen a lot of stars move since Melo and Deron Williams did back in, when was that, 2012? Yeah. So yeah, I think you just got, if you're going to do that, going to go that route, and you got to call quietly, oh so quietly, and see what's available. Because things will get really ugly if Dame or CJ finds out they're on the block.
I would be shocked if they even had any sort of discussion about Dame. I just don't see them even thinking about it. Dame's their guy. They chose him over Aldridge. That's their guy. So I think if they do make a big move, it's gonna be CJ. That said, you know, I want to come down to the last question and kind of wrap it up here. But Josh, up in Calgary, right? I'm not wrong.
Yeah, Calgary.
I do a great job of my homework ahead of time. You know, up in Calgary, who's your favorite League Pass team? Like, what team are you looking like? You're like, I don't care who they're playing against, I'm watching this squad.
It's crazy. Like, I had League Pass for a lot of years, but I hated it. I never got good feeds. The blackouts killed me. So now I have like this really like diverse like Shaw package where they're like, hey, you're from Canada, why don't you watch hockey instead? I was like, no, I want to watch basketball. So I get most of the games, not all of them. I get about 75% of the games. But my two or three favorite teams to watch this year, I would say probably like three, Clippers. Like, I love watching the Clippers, love watching Chris Paul, Blake Griffin. Two, the Bucks. Absolutely love watching the Bucks. Giannis, obviously, we talked about earlier, the Giannis fever is big. And honestly, I don't know why. I mean, I've said honestly 1,000 times, so either I'm really honest or a total liar. But honestly, I love the Magic. It just frustrates me like how bad they are, and they haven't done a great job drafting, and I hate that Hezonja doesn't get minutes, and everything about the Magic is frustrating. Elfrid Payton's one of my least favorite players to watch in the league. I don't think he's a starting point guard. I don't know what it is. I have an infatuation with the Orlando Magic. Like, I love Aaron Gordon. I love Mario Hezonja. Love Bismack. Maybe it's that I love Disney World. I don't know what it is, but something about the Magic. I tune into way too many Magic games.
Well, the Magic Castle kind of got you. That's the way I'm going to look at it. You know, I really feel like Hezonja is going to be the next guy they trade out who's going to be not a stud, but play really good minutes for another team. And everybody's just going to keep looking at the Magic going, like, you guys did it again. They did it with Mo Harkless. They've done it with Tobias Harris. I mean, every time they move a guy, that guy ends up being a piece for somebody else. Kind of hope they free Hezonja just because I want to see if he's really capable of being a ball player or not.
Me too. You tell me he's Croatian J.R. Smith and you don't even play him? Like, how can you feed me like that and not let me get a taste? Like, unbelievable. Yeah, he's not even in the rotation anymore. He's not even getting any minutes. Like, at least we were getting like a couple bad three attempts before in like 6 minutes a game.
Right.
Like, we almost got him out of the rotation. He's not even in there anymore. And I think with the Magic, part of it is what he says. Like, they're like 3 or 4 years in a row, you're like, oh, you know, they had another lotto pick, you know, maybe things are moving in the right way. But, you know, it doesn't happen. Every year they make a terrible move, things get worse. But again, they're not out of the playoff picture. I don't really love anything that they're doing with their rotation, but, you know, maybe they're figuring it out too. I don't know, it's early.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm going to take this Croatian J.R. Smith example for Hezonja, and I hope he has a shirt on, but, you know, this is going to be the guy that's the name I'm going to be rolling with for a while with this. Thanks to that little piece you just gave me.
Yeah, like you said, wouldn't it be so magic if, like, Mario Hezonja got dealt to, say, like, the Dallas Mavericks, who are bad right now, for, like, Wes Matthews and, like, some sort of, like, Bismack. They're like, okay, we're going to give you Bismack and Mario Hezonja for, like, Wes Matthews and Deron Williams because we want to add veterans and right, try to sneak into an 8 seed. And then Hezonja scores like 55 points in his first game as a Dallas Maverick. Like, how Orlando Magic would that be?
No, I mean, that's exactly what I'm going to expect. It may not be fair to Hezonja, but if he gets traded this summer during the season, I'm just going to be looking at it going like, all right, now you have to go put up 20 somewhere, because that's just kind of what they've done. Every time they've traded a guy, he's had success. even when they haven't traded a guy, they give up on Dwayne Dedman. He ends up on the Spurs and is playing a big role for the Spurs. I mean, it's just one of those things where it's like, I don't think the Magic know what they have with these guys. And they end up getting rid of them, and then it just sort of, you know, and those guys have success elsewhere. It really hurts them as a franchise. I don't know how you make improvements in that sense. And maybe it'll change with Vogel. I know you're upset with Hezonja not getting minutes right now. But maybe that means he can't play. I don't know. But it has been a running joke with the Magic for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's a thing. There's two aspects, right, to adding talent. I mean, you got to draft well, which is like the opposite of what the Kings have done. And then you've got to develop well, which is the opposite of what the Magic have done. And, you know, maybe things will change. Maybe they won't. But, you know, I do think that Hezonja is still a player. And I do think that Aaron Gordon's still a player, but I guess all we can do is wait and see.
Yeah, we definitely will. Well, Josh, I really appreciate your time. I've taken too much of it as it is. I appreciate you jumping on the Jump Ball podcast. Where can the people find you? What are you working on? You know, is there anything else you want to plug?
Yeah, so, you know, my Twitter, at Josh Eberle. If you want to give me a like on Facebook, that would be wonderful. I know Facebook sucks, but trying to expand that portfolio a little bit. Most of my work comes up on HoopMag. I freelance a little bit, but yeah, check out NBA's HoopMag. We got our print edition coming out this month. Sorry for being a little sluggish today, Mo. I didn't get my coffee. I was typing my notes as we were talking here, but I appreciate your patience.
I did not notice anything about being sluggish. You could have gotten away with that with me. Hope to have you again on the pod. I really enjoyed our conversation, and thanks again, Josh.
Oh, yeah, I think you got to have me on again, because that way I can show you the zooped-up version.
Oh, now I'm fired up. Now we're definitely going to put it down on the calendars. And all the fans, you know, all five of my listeners can all go back to this one and then compare notes.
Maybe we'll do it at that gelato shop.
Oh,
fire
man.
Fire it up, gelato.
I'll be busy eating gelato that whole time. I won't talk at all. All right, Josh. Well, thanks again, man.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. You can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. Leave a review, rate us, and have a great holiday, guys.